to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina.
Acknowledge me.
And as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Scott Chu. Scott, thanks for filling in last week. You and Sarah Sanchez did such a great job on last week's episode. Sarah Sanchez, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network, does a great job with Shelly V on the Fantasy Feud podcast. And just, you know, I was listening to the podcast yesterday because I had a rough week, but I finally got around to listening to it yesterday in the car. Really great stuff from both of you. Thank you.
Yeah, just glad to have you back, right? Like I can fill in for a host once in a while, but not something that I maybe need to do all the time. I sometimes forget like just how much work goes into just planning what the heck people are going to talk about.
Right.
I'm lucky that I just kind of get to sit back and you toss some names out and I'm like, sure, let's do it.
Well, I'm lucky that when I toss the names out, you just have some great analysis that you spit back forth to our listeners, and they should be very appreciative. I'm appreciative of you, and I'm sorry I missed our 100th episode. This is episode 101. And we're recording.
See, there you go. I had totally forgotten about that. Doing great.
Fine. No, and you're a great host. Any, you know, don't sell yourself short, my man. So, no. So we're recording this. It's about 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th. Right? Cinco de Mayo commemorates the Mexican victory over the French at the Battle of Puebla and gives us all an excuse to go out and have some tequila and just chill out. So also yesterday was May 4th, so a belated May the 4th be with you, Scott.
Oh, yeah. It's quite a juxtaposition of the two, right? Like you go from, you know, just from Star Wars to vaguely Mexican heritage. Like it's, it's quite a weekend.
Right. So, so like I said, it's May 5th and that's when we're recording. So if any news breaks between the time that you hear this podcast, apologize, but you know, what can we do? But the news that I saw that broke overnight, and it wasn't on the notes, Scott, but Trey Turner, shortstop for the Phillies, going to be out for 6 weeks due to a hamstring strain. Was having a good year so far. Remember, he got off to that awful start last season, but so far this year, 343 batting average with a 392 OBP and 460 slug, two home runs, 10 steals out of 11 attempts. Maybe a little lucky because that BABIP was a 421. And by the way, great job picking up on the BABIP. Love that conversation from Sarah and yourself last week. But so basically, Trey Turner, that's a significant loss for fantasy managers. And I'm just looking, you know, on the waiver wire. And by the time this podcast breaks on Monday, the waiver wire, most leagues would have run. But I'm thinking maybe Vaughn Grissom, who's 30% rostered in Yahoo leagues, maybe Willie Castro, 50%. Rostered in Yahoo leagues, tough to replace a guy like Trey Turner.
Yeah, I mean those guys don't replace Trey Turner in what Trey Turner provides, right? They fill positions, right? So like that's sort of the way you have to think about it. Like, it's sort of like the Moneyball thing, right? Like you're not necessarily replacing like Trey Turner, like, but you need to get those stats back. You probably won't get them all out of the shortstop spot. Right, that you were probably putting Trey Turner in. There's just not that many shortstops out there. Like, there's a couple guys that are shortstop eligible that are interesting, right? Like, if you just want the steals back, like Willie Castro is a guy who can steal some bases. He's hot right now. He'll be cold again soon, and you'll cut him. But he's someone that you can kind of plug in. He's getting some extra run. He's always been streaky. Vaughn Grissom, a guy who he can give you some good ratios. I'll say that for Vaughn Grissom. He's not going to do a ton in either the home runs or the stolen bases. Mm-hmm. Like he'll do, you know, rest of season, you're hoping you get double digits, like 10 and 10 rest mm-hmm. of the way. Like, right. I think that'd be a good outcome from him. And I think projections are going to put you at less than that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's Vaughn Grissom, especially in like a points league. Can get you some, you know, get you some juice back because he's going to put a lot of balls in play.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he's not going to strike out a ton. So that's there. I think the other guy that's weirdly shortstop eligible, even though he's not really done that in the majors, that'd be Wenzel Perez. I always get it wrong because I always want to say Wenzel Perez, and it's not it.
I looked it up. I think it's I try to figure out the pronunciations out of respect for the players. So I think it's Wenzel, according to
Like Wenzel Perez.
Yeah. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. But he's someone who, again, he's really hot right now. The Tigers are hitting him in the are hitting Perez in the middle of the lineup, which is great. Like, overall, this is a guy who in a full season would probably get like 15 to 18 home runs and some decent ratios. Like, not, not really a standout guy, not someone that is like really a draft. Like, even going into next year, if you told me he had the full, he was going to play every single day, Perez, I'd say, okay, then you still probably won't draft him, because 15 to 18 home runs and good ratios isn't that useful in a three outfield league, but in stretches it is, right? And he's the type of player that will have relevance in chunks of the season and not the whole season. I'm just like the conversation last week about Mike Tauchman. Like, you don't care about Mike Tauchman for the rest of the season.
Right.
You care about him while he's hitting second. You care about Wenzel Perez while he's hitting like third.
Right.
Like, that's when he matters. Eventually he won't be hitting third and you'll stop caring as much. But until then, ride the wave. So he's someone who is shortstop eligible that can help you fill that position and get a little bit of pop and some ratios back. But I think you're going to have to keep scanning the wire to pick up those other things you're losing from Turner. It just depends on what part of Turner you want to make up. Hmm. Is it the shortstop eligibility? Is it the stolen bases? Like, what is it?
Right. So I'm very proud of you, because I thought you'd be a lot more in as a Tigers fan. By the way, our Yankees and Tigers are playing this weekend. I don't want to dig into you, but Yankees took the first two games. But today's going to be tough. First of all, the weather in New York is a little iffy, so hopefully they get this game in. But your man, Tarik Skubal, is playing. But
Tarik Skubal is just the truth, man. Like,
he really is.
It's it keeps getting better. He's been really fun to watch.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be a good one.
Yes, definitely. Against Nasty Nestor. But I'm proud of you that you're not all in on Wenzel Perez, but he is intriguing. And like you mentioned, maybe not a guy that you might, depending on the size of your league, even if you knew that he was going to be an everyday player, roster. But it almost seems like maybe it could be like a 15 homer, 20 steal guy. Is that like an Andrés Giménez light, or am I giving him too much credit?
You're probably giving him too much credit, to be honest. Like, that's a lot of steals for him. Okay. I think like he did run a little bit in the minors, but running in the minors and running in the majors are very, very different things.
Okay.
He does have two steals so far, but the Tigers don't run that much.
Right.
In comparison to like other teams around the league. So the steals for him are just going to have to be very opportunistic, I would say. So the Tigers have 16 stolen bases on the entire season right now. That definitely puts them in the bottom 10 in the league. They're certainly nothing like the Reds or the Nationals or the Brewers, who just run.
Right.
So it's unlikely to be more than double digit steals. I mean, maybe 10. Right. Is what I'd say. If he, if he stays in the outfield the rest of the season, the Tigers have other guys coming up through the outfield that could put some pressure like on that playing time. Like, what happens if Parker Meadows figures out what the heck he's doing? That would put some pressure on the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a couple guys in the minor leagues who are interesting. Particularly, he's not going to be up immediately, obviously, but Justin Henry Molloy. OBP guy, he has some pop, he has some speed, but really what he has is a ton of walks, walking at 19. I mean, every step of the way in the majors, he walks like 20% of the time. So I'm interested to see Justin Henry Molloy eventually get a chance on this Tigers team. I just don't think it'll be soon.
Gotcha.
But I mean, that's the thing. So a lot of these guys that get hot this time of year, people want it to be more. And they ask me a lot, like, what do you feel about this guy rest of season? And the sort of obligatory answer that I have to that is like, I'm going to give you some numbers, but those aren't the numbers that are important. The fact that Wenzel Perez can hit 15 to 18 home runs in a full season isn't actually that important to understanding his full value, because you really only care for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a streamer in the outfield.
Right.
And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I endorse it. Go for it. I just don't think like there's not this like huge ceiling that's going to get cracked open or anything like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I was reading before we got started, Mining the News, Jeff Zimmerman put out a column on the 4th yesterday on Saturday. And he mentioned that defense is an issue with Perez, Wincell Perez. And if he would replace anyone, it might be Parker Meadows, who you said maybe he could figure it out, or Zach McKinstry. So, I mean, you look at – he's been a good OBP guy, but I guess we're spending too much time on Wincell Perez, when really who we should be spending time, if you're talking about any Tigers, your man Riley Green, too. He's been tearing it up. But
That's going to be the feature on this week's hitter list, actually. Yeah. I just sent that over to the graphics guys. It's going to be fun. Riley Green is now in my top 50 hitters. Mm-hmm. The things that Riley Green, I love that we get to start out talking Tigers. I don't get to do this that often. It's been a bleak couple of years, but Riley Green already at 8 home runs, just hit his 8th home run yesterday in his very first at bat of the game. Yesterday being Saturday, mm-hmm. Even in the preseason, I said that projections were selling him short, because mm-hmm. they were putting him at 15 home runs ish. And I'm like, no, there's 20-25 in this bat. So the speed hasn't been there. I was hoping he'd steal more bases. He's currently at 0. The Tigers are not running that much. You don't run that much when you're hitting a bunch of, when you're hitting a bunch of home runs and doubles, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Stealing third's hard. So, what Riley Green's doing, the most amazing part about it, I think, right now is the plate discipline. He is one of the lead leaders in walks, mm-hmm. right? So Riley Green is walking a ton. It's a 16.9% walk rate. The strikeout rate at 24.6%. That's beautiful. It's not like it's luck. BABIP is low. The difference between his WOBA and expected WOBA is pretty marginal. It's like less. If you see, when you're looking at that WOBA versus ex-WOBA and you want to know how much it's, when do you start saying he's being really lucky? Like, I don't care about a 20-point gap. A 20-point gap between the expected, any expected stat versus actual stat, that's not an indicator of luck. Right? 20 points is nothing. You got to start when you start seeing like 50 points, that's when you're really like, okay, luck is playing a factor here. Or there's another explanation, like the classic being Isak Paredes is a guy who like always is going to overperform his expected WOBA. If you're looking at the one from Baseball Savant or the one that's on Fangraphs, because it doesn't take into account the fact that Isak Paredes pulls the ball every time, mm-hmm. but so he's not, Riley Green, not really getting, it's not a luck thing. It's not, the line drive rate is a little high, but even if it comes back down, it probably still looks good. It's only 23% right now. And actually, maybe he can kind of stick around with that. He's got a pretty, the way he kind of swings, he does have a tendency to hit a lot of line drives. That was why the power projections were a little lower, but man, Riley Green, absolutely the truth. A top 50 hitter for me right now. The ceiling would be higher if I thought there were stolen bases, but I had been dreaming of a 25 home run Riley Green, and I think that could be this year.
Awesome. Okay. Talk about another outfielder that's been getting some helium this week. Like I said, this podcast debuts on Monday morning, so waiver wire fab has run already, but Jacob Young getting some helium in terms of a guy who's been very hot, center fielder for the Washington Nationals, is looking through his first 25 games, batting .311. No power, but lots of speed. 12 stolen bases in those first 25 games. That puts him at a clip of, 60 or so. like you said in your hitter list article, batting towards the bottom of the lineup, batting ninth, but the speed is real. And I actually put a claim in for him. I don't know if I'm going to get it in my TGFBI because I need some speed. So I'm dropping Abner Uribe, who's in the minor leagues now. And I spent a lot of money on thinking that he would be the closer for the Brewers. But Jacob Young, in terms of, I guess, he's getting a lot of ride now, too, because Robles has been hurt. Victor Robles has been hurt. But do you think that, and by the way, I should just mention, as of Sunday, day-to-day because of back spasms, Jacob Young. But do you think he gets a longer ride even when Victor Robles gets back in the lineup?
Yeah, and actually, since I dropped that hitter list, The two game, including here on Sunday, Jacob Young has moved up to first.
Whoa. In the lineup. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he's now up there with CJ Abrams. Having CJ Abrams hitting behind you right now is a good place to be if you want to be scoring runs. Look, the Nationals are one of the most aggressive teams on the base paths right now. Like, we have to look at them like we looked at the Rays last season, in that batting for the Nationals means you're going to get chances to run, right? Mm-hmm. If you've got any kind of legs whatsoever, they're going to let you run. Mm-hmm. So moving up to the top of the lineup makes Jacob Young a lot more interesting to me, because as aggressive as they are, you need plate appearances to get stolen base opportunities, right? Like, you've got to be out there. You got to be putting the ball in play. You know, the ratio, the 311 is a big surprise to me. I think that's going to come down, but also I think the walk rate is going to go up. Only walking 2.5% of the time right now and through 81 plate appearances. Last season, we saw him for a little stretch. It was up at 8%. The minor leagues, he generally walked a little above average. So we should see, like, the hits will come down, the batting average will come down, but the OBP shouldn't drop that much, because I think as the batted ball luck comes down, the walks will go up and everything will kind of balance itself out on the OBP side. And he's just going to run, right? If you just lost Trey Turner and you need steals, Jacob Young is a great place to look, because that's what he's going to do. He's going to run. And he can get some runs scored now if he can get out of the bottom of that lineup. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be the real key. He should, you know, he's still not going to provide any RBI. He has 7. Trey Turner was a leadoff guy and he had 9.
Right.
All right. So, like, leadoff guys don't get you RBI. That's just the way it goes. But that's not why you're getting Jacob Young. You're not getting Jacob Young for the RBI. You're getting him for balls in play, if you're in a points league, and you're getting him for speed. Get those stolen bases.
And now that he's batting at the top of the order, maybe some runs if you're lucky. So,
right.
Yeah. And you're looking at his minor league record, batted 274 in 4 seasons. So I agree with you. I think that batting average of 311, a little high. But the OBP over those 4 minor league seasons for Jacob Young was 359. So I agree with you. I think those walks are going to come up a little bit as well, because he's had some double-digit walk totals. Percentage-wise in the minor leagues as well. So,
if there's a quick comp I can make on Jacob Young, if you started the season trying to get, you probably put all of your stolen base eggs into the Esteri Ruiz basket, and that has gone terribly.
Right.
You can get a lot of them back right here. This is a guy in a full season who would steal 30, 40 bags.
Right.
Obviously, Esteri Ruiz was like 60, but that kind of player doesn't really exist on waiver wires. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of play you're looking at, especially when I say no power, like none. The dude doesn't hit fly balls, and when he does, they don't go very far.
Right. Agree with you 100% there. So baseball, the reason why we love baseball, we love the game. You never know what's going to happen. Scott, the A's on Sunday morning are a 500 team. So if you took the over on total games won for the season for the A's, it's still a long season, a lot of baseball left to play, but you got to be feeling pretty good about yourself. One of the guys that's been getting some tread, and I think you might know him a little bit because he was in the Tigers system a little bit for a short period of time, Tyler Nevin, so far in his first 27 games, batting .302 with an .843 OPS, 4 homers, 10 RBI. I don't think he's very a long-term option, but, with the third base position being what it is in fantasy baseball, Tyler Nevin, I think you could do a little worse if you're looking for, a short-term stream.
Yeah, and again, that's what it is, right? So Tyler Nevin, it's a stream. I think overall, we're not looking at a guy who is going to provide like big-time stats, right? A full season, I don't know, playing for the A's in that horrible ballpark.
Right.
It's probably like up to 15 home runs, maybe.
I
know that he has, he's already got 4 through 27 games, but that pace is a little unrealistic to me. He doesn't hit the ball terribly hard. He doesn't, it's not like he hits a ton of fly balls either. Tyler Nevin's just a guy, and that's okay. Right. Because he's just a guy who's in a very, very good opportunity.
Right.
And that's something that, again, we talked about. I mean, he's hitting second right now. He has been hitting second for a little while now. he's, you know, he's got a bunch of eligibility. You could probably plug him in at first, third, and outfield. He's, yeah, Tyler Nevin is just a guy, but he's just a guy with a very good opportunity, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, the ratios are going to come down. All of the ratios are going to come down, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. He's going to, I don't want to say he's going to turn back into a pumpkin, but he's going to turn back probably into waiver wire fodder for anyone in like a 12-team redraft league. But he's not that today. So go ahead and ride it till you find something new.
Right, right. Talking about a couple other players, then we'll take our first break. Jurickson Profar, was a little surprised to see that he was rostered in 72% of Yahoo leagues. Kind of like, I don't know if calling him a post-hype sleeper is a little strong, but on pace for a 20
post-hype.
Right, right. Because he's 31 years old, and it seems like, you know, 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases is his pace right now. Seems to like it in San Diego, you know, and, you know, another guy we could kind of piggyback, because we could talk about if he's a post hype sleeper, Joe Adell is a post hype sleeper, right?
And yeah, he's just the two posts, because yeah. Jurickson Profar has 997 career games going into Sunday.
Right, right.
Right.
He's finally figured it out though.
You know, he's put some decent seasons together in the past. I'm only mildly surprised he's back with, you know, San Diego. They keep, he just keeps getting re-signed. He had that, you know, the thing about Jurickson Profar is like, he was not good in Colorado.
Yeah. Which right? Is shocking, like, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So Jurickson Profar, I think the one thing I would caution people about is like, you're going to be getting the tail end of this run, mm-hmm. right? Like Profar, he got a couple games to where he was hitting first. And that was probably the most exciting bit, because he crushed it in his leadoff games. He's only got like two strikeouts in his last like 10 games. Profar putting a ton of balls in play. He's a fine play in points leagues. He'll steal a bag every once in a while. He'll hit a couple home runs. He can put up decent ratios for stretches. But overall, the upside on Jurickson Profar is a back end outfielder, right? Like don't get confused that he is and start thinking that he is more than the sum of his parts, right? This is a dude who has not hit 20 home runs since 2019, right? Like that was it. Mm-hmm. Like that was the last time. That was with the juice ball. He also did it 1 year before then. 2022, he hit 15 home runs. Last year he had 9. Like this is not a guy who's going to keep lighting up the box scores. But again, he's someone who has some positional flexibility, who has, you know, Profar has some, you know, he's pretty decent for OBP and points because he takes walks, puts a lot of balls in play. And he's no longer going to be leading off, though, with Arias now in San Diego, mm-hmm. which, you know, just a brief note on Arias. Cool. Changes like literally nothing about Luis Arias's fantasy value has changed.
Yeah.
You move teams to him. Nothing happens. I'm a little interested about Jacob Marcy, who was someone who was sort of on my radar coming into the season as a guy who might sneak his way onto the Padres roster, who's got some speed. Now he's out in Miami. In Miami, the big guy who has real potential fantasy value, Vidal Brujan, one-time prospect, really, really big. Like he's a real big speed guy. This guy can blaze on the base paths, but getting an opportunity in Miami right now. He's led off a few times. He originally a Tampa Bay Rays prospect.
Yeah,
I remember. Hasn't really done that much. And I'm sorry, he hasn't let off really, but he is getting more playing time. If he gets more, I'm very interested. He's done very, very well so far. Vidal Brujan, he's got a 7% strikeout rate through 57 plate appearances, 10.5% walk rate, .294 batting average. Like the slug is going to go away.
Right.
This is a guy who's going to probably slug 400, but this is true 70 grade speed for Vidal Brujan. This is a guy who, you know, in 2021 in 103 games in AAA, he stole 44 bags.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like we're talking elite speed for Vidal Brujan. I think that's something that he can start unlocking more. Mm-hmm. He gets caught a lot. Like even in the minors, he got caught a lot, but that's a coaching thing. And I think that can get fixed.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, that might be someone in a deep league. If you're kind of speculating for stolen bases, Vidal Brujan is someone who I would start doing that with.
Great call, especially if you lost Trey Turner and you play in a deeper league. And you know, Vidal Brujan, you know, before Juan DeFranco became a thing for the Rays, was a really a hyped up prospect, 287 batting average, with a 799 OPS in eight minor league seasons. Just seemed that every time he hit the major leagues, couldn't hit, then send him back down to the minors, he was back being productive again, and maybe now he's figured it out. He's only 26, so, and he's going to get some playing time in Miami because, you know, obviously with the trade of Arias, they've given up on this season.
Yeah, it was crazy to hear their management say that. Mm-hmm. Like they just said, like, we don't think we're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, what if you had kept the great, like, what if you just kept Kim Ng and kept moving forward?
Yes. Yes.
On a positive trajectory.
This like every that made the playoffs last season, right?
is a team who in literally 1 year turned it all around.
Yeah.
Like Kim Ng turned that whole organization around in terms of trajectory, mm-hmm. and her reward was being told that they were going to insert a new person above her instead of just letting her be. It just truly boggles the mind that this Kim Ng came in with a roster, brought in some great players that really helped this team, like Jake Berger, Luis Arias, had this offense that, you know, I know it was struggling.
They even traded for Josh Bell, and he had a productive end of the season. I know he's clumping this just, year, but
you know, nothing they were making but moves. Savvy, nothing but savvy moves. Mm-hmm. And her reward was to basically get run out of town. It boggles the mind. And now they're batting Nick Gordon fifth. that's where they are right now.
So just finishing up before we take our first break, Joe Adell, you talked about, I think you said Brujan gets caught stealing a lot, but Joe Adell has had 11 attempts, stolen six bases, got caught five. So it's hard to believe that Joe Adell is just 25 years old. He's had a rough week, but prior to that was doing okay. 265 batting average, four homers. 11 RBI. I mean, obviously going to get a lot of run now. It's tragic news about Mike Trout. I know he's probably going to be back before the end of the season, but just he's hurt again. It's just terrible. But what do you do?
And it's something totally new.
Right? Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, I think weirdly, this is a knee injury that could have been a lot scarier, a lot worse, right? Like torn ACL, dude's done for the year. Meniscus can heal, right? Like that's not an injury where there's like this huge recovery process, right? Like, yeah, obviously it takes time to come back, but it's not one that, you know, I'm not a pro athlete. I don't go through pro rehab, but I did tear my ACL and that's a long road, right? Like that is a job to come back from a torn ACL. Meniscus is a different story. That part of my recovery wasn't hard. In fact, that had gotten mostly healed before I even had my surgery, right? Like took a month and I was able with a torn ACL, I was able to walk very comfortably, right? Because the meniscus can heal itself and the ACL cannot. Now they'll still do surgeries for it to improve it. But either way, Joe Adell. So I like that he's striking out less.
Oh yeah.
I love it.
Went from 40% down to the 20-something. Yeah.
But keep in mind that we've seen that before, right? If you think way back to 2021, we've seen Joe Adell strike out less. He had 140 plate appearances in 2021, only struck out 22.9% of the time. We're still not seeing Joe Adell walk, right? That's a little troubling. That's something he was doing in the minors the last two seasons, not something that he's ever shown he can do in the pros. Joe Adell, there's obviously big power here. Like this is a guy who, if Joe Adell figures it out, this is a 30 home run power sort of player, right? Like 2023, he had 74 games in the minor leagues, AAA. He hit 24 home runs, right? Like this Joe Adell had some of the, he's one of the few true 70 grade power guys, right? Like, you know, not 80, 80 is a crazy, 80 grade shouldn't happen very often. Joe Adell isn't quite 80 grade, but this was a one-time top 10 prospect. We all remember that. Joe Adell, I really want to see the walks come up. The strikeouts are cool, right? Mm-hmm. I'm glad those are down. I want to see the walks come up, because that tells me when he can start taking more walks, that's really sort of that sign that the decision-making for Joe Adell is truly improving. Mm-hmm. Like, I can look at decision value right now, but with Joe Adell, it's consistency, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to be consistent when you're never walking, especially when you're a big power hitter like Adell, who really needs to be picking his pitches, right? Like, Joe Adell misses a lot. So he's making some okay-ish decisions mm-hmm. right now, in the top half-ish of the league overall in terms of decision-making, which, again, that's great, but the walks got to come up. That's when I'll start being excited about Joe Adell. Mm-hmm. I will rank, you know, Joe Adell may end up in the rankings because he's got a good opportunity right now.
Right.
Because they are letting Joe Adell not bat ninth, right? He hit second a few times recently. He is sometimes hitting more like sixth or seventh, but there's a great opportunity to play every day. I like that. He is hitting the ball hard. I like that. Mm-hmm. I got to see walks. Like, the walks will be the thing that tell us that Joe Adell might be for real.
Right. Right.
It's not home runs. We know he's strong, right? This time of year, it's very easy, I think, to get wrapped up in StatCast pages being all red, right? You go to Baseball Savant and there's all this red. You're like, oh man. But for a guy like Joe Adell, like, duh, we know he hits the ball hard. The problem mm-hmm. is, how often does he hit it, and how often does he let bad pitches go by?
Right.
Right. Like, that's what we want to know. That's the next step for him. That's a lot on Joe Adell. I got a lot of questions about Joe Adell over the last week.
I can imagine. That's why I brought him up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. and that's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the next step for a player is not always batted ball quality, mm-hmm. right? For Spencer Torkelson, it's batted ball quality, right? I know that he's not going to strike out, you know, Spencer Torkelson, not going to strike out too much. He's going to take some walks, but Spencer Torkelson, he's got a batted ball quality problem where mm-hmm. he's putting balls in play, but he's not doing it well, which a batted ball quality problem is not a death knell at all. In fact, I'd much rather they have that than a contact problem. Right. Because if you can't make contact, you then need to do you go from not making contact to making contact to making good contact. That's sort of like the stream. That's sort of like the path that you go down. You go from first, I need to make contact, then I need to make good contact. So if you're not even making contact, good contact sort of not really in the picture all the time, but or at least to do so consistently. But what we see, you know, for Joe Adell, the quality of contact's good. It's good. He needs to be consistent with good contact. He's going to have to take more walks. And that's because I know pitchers are going to challenge him outside of the zone mm-hmm. because they want to strike him out. They know that he will strike out. Even with the strikeout rate down to 25%, I know pitchers will keep attacking him outside of the zone. He's got to take the walks when they come.
Right. Yeah, great stuff. So let's take our first break here. When we come back, I want to talk about a few more players that are slumping, especially Ronald Acuña. I want to get your take on him. And then later on, hopefully we get time to talk about some of the rookies that have been called up recently. And we'll get to all that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast, Joe Galina. You can follow me at Joe Galina. And you can follow my man, Scott Chu, at If The Chu Fits. And Scott, you did a great job last week, you and Sarah Sanchez filling in for me, talking a lot about slumping players. So I just took a look at last April compared to this April league-wide, just for the heck of it. Batting average for the league in April 2023 was .247 with a .406 slug. And this season, batting average is .240 with a .385 slug. So batting average down overall 7 points. ISO is down 15 points from last year league-wide. And a slug is down 21 points from last year. I mean, you know, what could it be? I mean, could it be? I mean, we always talk about weather in April, and I can't tell you how many games I've watched so far this year where when you see the ball coming off the bat of someone and it just dies, you know, at the warning track, and even the announcer's like, well, you know, in July that would have been a home run. So, you know, I don't want to oversimplify things or not, but I mean, there's also been talks about baseball changing the ball, but you never know what ball you're going to be getting from the big leagues. Like, Kenley Jansen and Pete Fairbank, two quality closers. Fairbank is on the IL, of course, for the Rays. But they talked about, you know, every ball almost being different that they were dealing with earlier in the season. I don't know if that's still an issue, but just in general, and you run the hitter list. Have you noticed anything, any changes just in stats, you know, since last year? Or is it just something we always go through in April?
Power is down. It's hard to speculate as to why. And what's even more difficult is to come up with something that is actionable.
Right.
Right. It's very difficult to say, like, for example, when we knew the ball, let's say we know the ball is going to be juiced.
Right.
Right. We know for a fact it's going to be juiced. We know that fly balls will carry a little further. There's very specific, once we know that, if we know that's going to continue, there are specific players where we can say, like, hey, this is what's going to happen, right? Like, these are the types of players that can benefit, right? Same for, like, when they say, okay, they're going to get rid of the shift, right? Like, okay, we have an idea of what types of players can benefit, right? That you might consider moving up your board, or that you might be able to expect higher floors, those kinds of things. A ball that's been deadened a little, if we make that assumption, you can start maybe thinking that a couple players will struggle to get to their home run numbers, right? Like, actually a very good example of that would be Isak Paredes, who is trying to hit 315 foot home runs every time, right? He's a very good example. Like, he and Luis Arraez are guys you'll hear me talk about a lot, not because I'm, like, obsessed with them, even though I am a little. The reason you hear me talk about them is they are great examples of these extreme tool sets, right? Like, Isak Paredes tries to do one thing only, that is pull the ball in the air 315 feet right down the foul line, right? Because he knows that's a home run for him, right? He ain't going to hit the ball 400 feet. That's not really something he's going to do. He's not going to hit home runs dead center, but he knows that there's this little cutout in the left field wall at, like, in the trop that is, like, 315 feet, and he can just kind of tuck the ball in over there. So he's someone that might struggle with that a little bit because he's trying to hit wall scrapers. Whereas we know that, like, a deadened ball does not impact Jorge Soler's or Aaron Judge's home run upside because they don't hit 315 foot home runs. They hit 380 foot home runs,
right?
To the pull field, right? Or they hit, you know, like, they can hit the ball 500 feet. So who cares, right? Deaden the ball, right? Unless it's a beach ball, that thing's going, right? Like, it's gone. Right. So again, that's if you make that assumption, but we can't, right? We don't have that. Right. You can speculate a little, but it's no different than speculating on injury, right? Like Corbin Carroll, we're worried about the shoulder, right? We don't have anything definitive that says it's definitely the shoulder. Cause if we did, that's just what we would say.
Sure.
But we're, you know, it looks like that after the shoulder injury last season, that the power has struggled to return. Here's the thing. You can know that, but also injuries are temporary, right? Injuries do get better. Guys do heal. They even play and get better, right? We actually saw this with when Bryce Harper had Tommy John. It took a while, but then the power came back and he played through it. He did not need another IL stint to get the power back, right? He played through it and eventually the power came back. With the ball deadening and all this stuff, like, we don't know. We can't say for certain. Like, even a speculative injury is something we can say, like, okay, but we know what will happen eventually. Eventually the injury will get better. We just don't know when. Right. So that is how you sort of think about how do you trade for Corbin Carroll? Do you try to trade him away to someone who's still optimistic? Like, what do you do with the offensive environment? We know it's down. We know that offense is down. That's it.
But will it continue, right? I mean, we can't even predict it. Like I said, you know, a lot of times in April, you talk about, well, you know, the weather in the Northeast and all this stuff. So, and you bring up really good points. Let's talk about Ronald Acuna Jr., who's he's killing me a little bit in my auto new league. It's a 4x4 league where we track runs, home runs, OBP, and slug, and obviously not hitting home runs and not slugging. He, in his first 26 games, two homers and a slug of 350. So, you know, he had that knee issue in the preseason, but you think you got to think that it's not an issue because he's stealing bases. He's stolen 13 bases, although I guess when you plant yourself, when you're trying to swing a bat and you plant your knee, you would be twisting it a little bit. I guess it's a little different motion when you're swinging a bat as opposed to just running straight to it. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but barrel rate's half of what it was last season at 7.4. The average exit velocity down 3 miles per hour. So, you know, sometimes I don't know if I'm right to do this, but sometimes I equate the exit velocity with your bat speed and his whiff rate on fastballs for Acuna. His whiff rate on fastballs is up 17%. Zone contact rate is down a little over 10%. And those strikeouts, man, strikeout rate jumped from 11.4 last season to almost 28%. So, and then I looked at PL Pro as a pitcherless guy, right? PL Pro decision value, and looks like it fell off a cliff in zone decision value. So I'm curious to see. I know you do like in-depth dives with this kind of stuff. Pitcherless, when it comes to expected batting average, is 220 for him, and he's batting 258. Statcast is a little bit more optimistic with an expected of 251. So talk to me about Acuna. I know you've done a deep dive on him.
Yeah, I've done a couple. First, like these slumps, they happen all the time, right? We actually saw a slump worse than this in 2023, right? It was in like sort of late May to early June, He wasn't very good, right? Like he had a wOBA of just over 300, which is kind of where he's at now.
Right.
And then what happened is huge spikes, right? Sustained long spikes. In fact, in the AMA, you know, someone brought up the strikeout rate and they're like, look, this is something new. And that's where I have to stop people. This current strikeout rate is not new. Right now, it is worse than anything he did last season. Last season, Ronald Acuna's strikeout rate for a rolling 15-game period never got to 17%, ever. Like it was insane.
Yeah,
what Ronald Acuna
just
was
locked
was
in
able
that
to
season.
Do.
Yeah,
but we have seen this strikeout rate before from Acuna in pretty much every season before that. Right. Like it's actually pretty much in line. We've even seen it worse. Right. But, you know, so in 2022, the strikeout rate was quite high. Right. So this is less about is Acuna going to fall off a cliff? No. In fact, he's only like two or three home runs off his pace from last year. Right. Because he didn't hit at a 40 home run pace the entire season.
Right.
He spiked up over the summer and just hit a bunch of them, but he had four in April. Right. That was it. He had four. Now he has two. So he's really not that far behind that pace. But I am recalibrating my expectations. Look, 150 games of Ronald Acuna has happened twice, and he hit 40 home runs both times, right? I really wish I could say that that's going to happen again, and it could. But I think you need to recalibrate down to 30, right? I think that's still very – somewhere between like 25 and 30, I think, is the new sort of thing you should be going forward with on Ronald Acuna, saying – I still think I'm going to get 25 to 30 home runs, but 40 is probably not on the table. And if it comes, it'll be a surprise, right? The stolen bases, he's ahead of schedule, right? Dude's going to steal 50 bases, maybe 60. Like that, great, right? You're still getting that. I think the batting average, I mean, he's a career 291 hitter. A lot of that is boosted by his 337 last season. Okay, maybe not a 337 hitter last season. He had an unbelievable run of plate discipline. Just truly incredible what he did. I mean, a guy had a 41-73 season, right? 41 home runs, 73 stolen bases. Maybe it was a career year. That's okay, right? Because if Ronald Acuna didn't play last April, he just didn't play, I'm pretty sure he still ends 2023 as the best fantasy player.
Right.
Right? Like that is how good this guy is, right? Like we waited over half the year last year for Trey Turner to break out. And then he went on this stretch where he saved whole seasons for people. in 2 months, right? If Trey Turner can do that, Ronald Acuna can do it like double. Mm-hmm. Like that's the level. There is no player with more talent in baseball than Ronald Acuna Jr., right? No one. Like there are guys with maybe more power. Arguably, no, there's nobody with more usable fantasy speed than Ronald Acuna, mm-hmm. right? Like there's not many guys that can do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
There's like him and maybe Bobby Witt Jr. Right. Mm-hmm. And for stretches, Julio Rodriguez, like that's it. This is an elite, elite player. I am not trying to trade him at all. I think if you do, it's because you have extreme risk mitigation and a big gaping hole at shortstop, because right. then you're trading for Bobby Witt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's it.
So I'm looking at Yahoo trades that have recently happened for him. And I don't know if I like this, but let's say if you're a guy or a gal that's lost Trey Turner, I see one trade where Ronald Acuña for Francisco Lindor, two small players.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
There is one in dynasty or redraft. There's one player I am interested in. It's a one for one swap. And I don't even love it, but I accept it that if you have the positional need, go ahead and do it for Bobby Witt Jr. That is it. That is, full stop. There is no other player I am considering.
Right. That's a blockbuster deal right there, Witt for Acuña.
It is. And it's the only one I would consider. And it's fine. I don't think there's winners and losers there. Yeah. I think that you are swapping an outfielder for an infielder.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I like your take that, you know, if he is healthy, and I think he is, right? But, you know, he's shown that when he's at his best, he's, you know, 6 or 7 home runs a month. So you got 5, you know, chuck up April as a loss. So that you got 5 more months left to the regular season, you know, 6 home runs a month. Yeah. 30 home runs from here to the end of the season, 35 home runs to the end of the season. Very possible.
Yeah. Let's get away from comparing him to his 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, again, that's one of the best seasons of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's like always comparing Judge to breaking the AL home run record.
Right.
Right. Like you don't do that, but let's compare, like, let's look at Acuña as maybe something between what he showed in 120 games in 2022. And also knowing the upside is what we saw in 2023. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I think, you know, in 120 games, he only hit 15 home runs, but he did steal 30 bases. You know, the numbers were down across the board, but like, that's the realistic floor. What you saw in 2022, I think, is the realistic floor right now for Ronald Acuña on a per game basis. Still get a ton of stolen bases, still has power, but it's more like 25 home run power, 20 to 25 home run power as a floor, right? 40 stolen bases as a floor, 266, 351, right? For at batting average and OBP floor, right? Like that's the floor. Which is why you drafted him first. Like you drafted him first because the floor is still a top 10 player.
Right.
Right. Like that's the thing. And I don't want to make it sound like, oh, everything's going to be fine. Right. Like we had this talk in the AMA, which again, if you're a Reddit user, please check out the AMA over at Our Fantasy Baseball. It's a great conversation. I mean, we're talking, you know, I think there's like 300 comments in there right now, talking about all kinds of things all over the baseball spectrum. And there's a, you know, I'm tooting my own horn a little bit, but we had a nice little conversation about, you know, someone was worried about Ronald Acuña Jr. And I think the key thing there was like, what do you mean by worry? Do you mean worry like you're not going to get what we saw in 2023? Yes, be worried. That does not look like it's on the table right now. That's okay. And that could change. Like, let's be real. This guy is so good that could change. 2 hot months, all of a sudden he's back on track, right? That could happen. And there was a point in there, he said, where the other user just kind of said, like, look, these stats stabilize, like these are meaningful samples. And remember, stabilize does not mean flatten. Stabilize does not mean will be like this. It means not random, right? So this strikeout rate is not random. And it's not. We've seen it before. We've seen Ronald Acuña Jr. strike out this much before. It's not bad luck. It's not random sample. It's just a bad sample. Right. And that this is what he looks like when he's struggling a little.
So let me ask you this. What do you think about the average exit velocity down 3 miles per hour and the hard hit rate down 9%? Like, how do you explain that? And how does that, you know, there's no
down real, 3 miles per hour from 2023.
Right.
Hard hit rate down from 2023.
Right.
It looks a lot like 2022.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that like the average exit velocity is up 0.4 miles an hour from 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The hard hit rate is down 1.5% from 2022, which again, what that's telling me is this is what the floor looks like. Mm-hmm. When you get bad months from Ronald Acuña Jr., this is what they are. There are 14 stolen bases, a couple home runs, plenty of runs scored in decent ratios.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you poor thing. How are you going to survive? Right. Look, I get it. You used your first overall pick and you wanted first overall value right out the gate. You didn't get it, but man, there's some other people who are hoping, like, that wish they were you for their first round pick. Corbin Carroll drafters, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they wish they were you right now, Ronald Acuña drafter, because you took Ronald Acuña first overall. Yeah, sure. The person who got Bobby Witt second, they're loving life right now, and that's great for them. But you took Ronald Acuña Jr. first overall because you knew that this dude could have 31 runs in 31 games while he's struggling.
Hmm.
Like, what? When a guy is slumping and this is what you're getting, like, yeah, sure. The OBP is higher than the slug. You have legitimate things to be concerned about. But a slumping Ronald Acuña Jr. has a 121 WRC plus, 31 runs scored, 14 stolen bases, right? A 12.4% walk rate. That's great. Like, that is what a great player looks like when slumping.
Mm-hmm.
This is a slump. It is. No doubt about it. I don't think anything is broken. Sure, 2023 probably off the table, right? In terms of some numbers, but he could certainly still get to that run scored number, right? 149 runs scored this year or last year. That's less than one run scored per game.
Mm-hmm.
He's at one run scored per game right now, right? And that's with this offense that has a couple pieces struggling. Austin Riley is struggling. Matt Olson is struggling, right? All those guys are struggling, and Ronald Acuña Jr. still has 31 runs scored.
Yeah.
So I'm 121 WRC plus.
So to defend what you're talking about the average exit velocity, I'm just looking at, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, who hits the ball as hard as anyone. And in 2017, when he hit 59 home runs, he had a 91.9 average exit velocity. And then in 2021, it was 95.1. And, currently this season so far, it's 92.3. So exit velocity does fluctuate more than I anticipated.
And it's down, but it's not, like, it's still 91.
It's still above average. Yeah, it's still above average.
It's still
yeah.
really good. Again, mm-hmm. you're talking about this is what he looks like when he's bad,
mm-hmm.
and we're concerned. Like, what do you mean by concerned? Again, are you worried about getting to last year's numbers? Be worried. Probably mm-hmm. not going to happen in all aspects. The batting average is probably not going to be 330 again. The stolen bases should be close. The runs scored should be close. The RBI should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The home runs will be down. Right. That's the thing you're going to lose. Right. You're probably taking, 15 home runs that you might have hoped for if you thought he was going to repeat that you're not getting now. So now you got to go find some extra power, but everything else is still there.
Mm. All right. Let's talk about a couple other slumping players before we take our second break. I was looking at the Blue Jays. Basically, the Blue Jays, two top productive hitters, and one of them has a pretty poor batting average, Dalton Varsho. But Varsho and Justin Tucker, but Bichette, Bo Bichette, and Vlad Guerrero, slumping terribly so far this season. And you look at especially Vlad, like, where has his power gone? I'm looking at his ISO over the past. This is the fourth year where it's really taken a nosedive, and his WRC plus down to 101 right now. His first 25 games, Vlad Guerrero Jr., 3 home runs and 11 RBI. What has happened to Vlad Guerrero Jr.? And if you want, you can even throw a Bo Bichette in there, but I'm sure you have a lot to say about Vlad.
Yeah. So a couple things. Let's start with, like, the ground ball rates just continue to stay very, very high, mm-hmm. right? This is a guy who hits a lot of ground balls and also a lot of pop-ups. So there's, like, a fairly not great, basically, you know, that 10 to 15% of his fly balls will be infield flies, and he doesn't hit a ton of fly balls to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And so, this season, 50.6% of his fly balls are in the infield, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Maria so Hardy. It's the power has been trending down for, you know, he broke out in a big way back in 2021 when he hit those 48 home runs. Then it was down to 32. Then it's down to, now it's down to 26. And I think what we might be looking at here, and again, this shouldn't be like doom and gloom because this is still like a very, very good player, but we are looking at a guy who might just be more of a 25 home run hitter in terms of like what you can sort of write in ink, right? With maybe a little give here and there, but look, the plate discipline's pretty good. The strikeout rate is up right now, but not in a way that is like terribly unusual for him. It's like a little bit up, but like up means 20%. Don't care about that. It's not like he isn't making contact. He's making plenty of it, right? This is still a guy with elite bat skills. This is a guy who doesn't chase. This isn't, you know, this isn't one of those like classic things. This is more of a, maybe he just is always going to struggle getting the ball in the air. Because even when he does hit it in the air, he doesn't pull it that often, right? The pull rate right now down at 35.4%. It's never really been much above 40%, even in his best seasons. But, you know, that hurts the home run fly ball rate, which is also what's been coming down, right? So the there's like several things you can do to measure power. And the home run fly ball rate is a good one, like how many fly balls turn into home runs. And in his peak, that was 26.5%. That's then it was 19.9, then 14.4, now 9.4, right? And that's with the infield fly ball rate going up, which means more fly balls that have absolutely no chance to be hits. The fact that his batting average isn't worse is sort of impressive for a guy who hits this many ground balls. But he still barrels it up.
Yeah,
he still barrels it up. He still hits it hard. In fact, he's hitting the ball as hard as ever, right? But it's a lot of grounders, and grounders can't be home runs.
Right.
Like, even if they leave, they're a double, you know, like there's no, like you can't hit it through the ground to get a home run.
Right.
So I think maybe what we just have to do is recalibrate. The batting average is going to get a lot better. It won't be maybe as high as it could have been when he was still like the number one prospect, generational type talent sort of guy.
Right.
But, and the RBI will still be there. Maybe not quite as much because his teammate, Bo Bichette, also someone who is not getting better. These guys sort of peaked in their first seasons, which stinks.
Yeah.
Right. but Bo Bichette now looks maybe like last season wasn't so fluky. Right. In terms of the power, like the speed is gone. He's running a little bit more than he did last season, but this is maybe 10 stolen bases for Bo Bichette. 20 home runs sounds about right for him. The batting average is bad, right? And it's not bad luck either. Like, yeah, the BABIP is down at 232, which is really low and should get better, but he's also just hitting the ball really poorly. Right? Like a lot of ground balls. So what's going to happen eventually? So Bo Bichette hits so many balls the other way. That's what's killing that home run power. Right? It's really hard to hit home runs to the opposite field. Right? Like that's like Miguel Cabrera stuff, right? Miguel Cabrera at his best could kind of look like it's effortless to flick a ball the other way and get a home run. That's really hard to hit home runs oppo. So eventually some of these ground balls that Bo Bichette is hitting are going to sort of fade back into the line drive area. Some of these fly balls will also become line drives. That'll bring the batting average up a bit. I don't think he's going to get maybe all the way back up to being the 300 hitter he's been in years past because he had, you know, this bad of a month, but he should end the season around 280, 290 still for Bo Bichette. But that's what we've got. And again, this does look like a quality of contact problem. He's not striking out more. He never walked that much to begin with. It's just a matter of quality of contact, which as I said earlier, is not like a fatal thing, right? Cause you're right. He's not barreling up the ball and that hurts all of the Statcast numbers.
Sure.
Right. But like they're, it's so much blue, or like, but it's all very redundant because it's all just indicative of the same problems. That the quality of contact isn't quite there. It'll get there, but that still means this is a 20 home run guy. And he's going to probably keep slipping down my ranks a little bit because the Blue Jays offense isn't what we hoped,
right?
Overall. Because with him and Vlad not performing quite so well, you know, last season, 135 games, we had a very disappointing number of runs in RBI for Bo Bichette, and that might be the reality. Mm-hmm. It might be more like 80 runs and 80 RBI in a full season,
right?
Which is not fun, but maybe that's just what he is. 20 home runs, 80 runs scored, 80 RBI, and really good ratios, right? Mm. Who is, you know, still a much better player in points leagues, but maybe not someone that is the long-term like star that we hoped he would be.
Right, right. All right, so last player we'll talk about, because we could even talk Glaber. Oh, my God. Glaber, one home run and 35 games, batting 221. His walk here, you thought that he'd be a little more focused, but watching the Yankees every day, not happening. But I wanted to talk about Randy Rosarena. And it's always had issues, at least what I can remember, of his StatCast stats, always saying that they were, you know, he was performing worse than what his real life stats were. But this season is just off the charts. And in his first 33 games, batting 140 with a 256 slug, 51 WRC plus. You could get into, you know, your reasonings behind it, but I've seen more than one announcer in watching Rays games, and it wasn't their home announcers, but discussing how he's put up so much bulk in his top part of his body that it's almost like they think that it might have slowed down his bat speed. And if you look, you know, we talked about exit velocity earlier, but his exit velocity is down a couple of miles per hour. His hard hit rate is down a little bit as well from last season. Like, I don't know, it's like 14% down, his hard hit rate. And it's kind of strange for a guy who spent the offseason bulking up his upper body. And he's striking out at a 28.7 rate. And he did that in 2020 and 2021, and he had good seasons. So it's wondering what the heck is going on with a Rosarena at this stage.
So let's start with the strikeouts, because that's the thing I feel the most confident about. This is normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Randy Rosarena has always spiked his strikeout rates at times. He did it several times last season, just as bad as he is now. In fact, even at the, you know, sort of towards the end of last year, it looked like this, right? Randy Rosarena is an aggressive hitter, and he's someone who goes through incredibly bad, like he goes through these periods where he's never, like very rarely striking out. And then almost immediately after, like within 2 weeks, he's completely flipped it to where, I mean, there's like literally a point in like between 20, even just in 2023, right? Where, you know, one day his strikeout rate over 20 games is 18.3%. And then 2 weeks later, it's at 30,
mm-hmm.
right? For a rolling 20 games. So it takes a while to move a whole rolling game average up by 10%. And he does it fairly quickly. Randy Rosarena has always been like that. I'm not worried about the strikeouts. Now the slump part. So again, Rosarena had long slumps. Even last season, he had probably a solid like 3 or 4 weeks where he was putrid. It was late last season. It was mostly in late July and through mid-August. He was terrible, right? But he wasn't quite this bad, right? Like a 200 wOBA is bad. A 150 to 170 wOBA is really bad. It's not easy to be quite that bad, but the Rays don't seem interested in platooning him. I do think that he will spike back up. The question is going to be, what do those spikes look like? How long do they last? Right. We have seen him be a little better over the last week. It's kind of hard to notice because he's just been so bad overall, but you know, to be better than a 200 wOBA isn't that hard. it does not take very many hits. Like his rolling 20 game wOBA has gone up despite hitting 118 over the last 10 games, because his wOBA over that period is 275. and not 150. So he does have two home runs in that little stretch, I guess. Am I worried about Randy Arozarena? Sure. Sure. He's very streaky, but this is worse than the streaks we've seen in recent memory, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen him be bad. Now it's a little worried because it's even worse.
Right.
And the role that this is what I used rolling charts for. I'm like, okay, he slumped. Is he in his normal band of slumps? And now he's below it. That's a problem. The strikeout rate, that's in the band. The WOBA overall, like, so his overall performance is outside of the band. That's not good. I think some of it is going to correct itself. Again, it's quality contact problem. He's not pulling the ball. I think the pull rate will probably come back. I think, you know, he's never been a big line drive hitter. So that's probably going to stay the way it is. He's not getting any infield hits. Usually that is something he gets. So that should improve a little bit. The infield fly ball rate is kind of high for him. So I think that could come down a little, but yeah, I think he still gets to 20 home runs. I think he can still get to 20 stolen bases. The ratios just might be kind of ugly until then. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, I mean, he was never like a great ratios guy for batting average. His OBP was better. He's still walking. That's great. Randy Arozarena. Here's the big thing with Randy Arozarena. We've seen very consistent outcomes for him over the last three seasons, despite his streakiness. This season might be a little less than we've gotten the last few years, but I think it will get back to that. Just remember, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it. He is probably untradeable. You absolutely should not try to trade him. You're still getting your home runs and your steals. You're just getting horrible ratios, and you're going to have to just accept that for right now, because nobody wants him. Nobody's trading for him. You will not get anything close to what Randy Arozarena could be for rest of season. He could still have another 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases rest of season, even at his current pace. That's probably what he gets to, right? Through May, June, July, August, September, that's 5 months. And he had about four home runs and four stolen bases in April, five more months. That gets him 20 more of each, right? Mm-hmm. It's just bad ratios. They should get a little better, but you know, for now, you know, cause like his BABIP is not going to stay 167 forever. Right. Mm-hmm. He has been a little bit unlucky. Not that much, right? His expected WOBA is still not great. It's 293 versus 230. Right. So that, I mean, it'll go up, but you know, they're still not good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a lot of talking about Arozarena just to kind of say like, you're stuck with him. The ratios will bounce back a little bit, maybe not as much as we hope, but the counting, you know, the counting stats will be fine. The home run and stolen base numbers will be fine. Sorry.
Yeah.
Is it a skill degradation? I mean, he's only 29. So like, usually we don't see that happen quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, maybe it is the bulk, right? There is something to changing your body type.
Sure.
That makes it hard to repeat motions. Mm-hmm. Right. But like, he's still running. He's still, you know, still hitting home runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's getting caught on the base pads. Like he's 4 for 4. It'll be okay, but you're stuck with Randy Arozarena.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a couple.
Maybe bench him if you feel like it in tough matchups, but
yeah,
that's it.
I think you would. Yeah. At this stage, Randy Arozarena for Xander Bogaerts. I'm seeing that as a trade in Yahoo, which would make sense if you lost Turner. Right. Two slumping. Bogaerts has been slumping as well. Yeah, let's see what else.
I guess that's one I don't get because like, what does Xander Bogaerts do? Like the batting average for Bogaerts will be better than Arozarena, but I'm not sure anything else will. I think the OBP's rest of season will be very similar. I think Arozarena edges him in home runs by a lot.
Yeah.
Like in stolen bases double. Like that makes sense in a points league.
Yeah. And I'm thinking the manager who's trading for Bogaerts just lost Turner, right? And just needs a body. And they don't like what's on the waiver wire, right? And
I'm sure. But like everyone talks about buying low.
Yeah.
But like everybody loves to sell, like, which is weird. And I used to be like, wow, how is it so easy to buy low? Because people love selling low.
Yeah.
It's insane to me. Like, why? Why would you, like, what do you possibly think you could get for Arozarena right now? Like, nothing. So don't. Like, Bogaerts is not what you want because Bogaerts won't do anything better.
I get what you're saying, especially since Arozarena has a history of being productive. You know, I mean,
and he's still doing lots of things.
He was a 2020 guy last season, a 2030 guy season before, 2020 guy, you know, before that. So
Yeah, the ratio's hurt, but like that's one category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's take our second break. When we come back, let's take a look at some of the rookies that have recently been called up and get Scott's opinion on if they should be rostered or not. Maybe a little strategy talk too in terms of when it comes to rostering rookies. And we'll talk about that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina, Scott Chu. Follow me at Joe Galina. Follow Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. And Scott, we've been seeing plenty of teams being very liberal with the way that they're calling up their rookies. But I talked about this. I like to quote him because he's the man. The legend Lenny Melnick, a rookie is a rookie is a rookie. So any specific strategy when it comes to deciding on when and if to roster a rookie on your part? Like, I mean, I love the shiny new toy. I'm a toy collector. So I like to go after some of these, high-profile rookies that are coming up. But, you know, I guess you just have to just make sure you don't have too many on your roster or in your starting lineups because they're real risky.
Yeah, I think people forget that because in recent years, we've had a lot of guys come up and just hit immediately. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that's hard. That's rare.
Yes.
It's not common. There's two assumptions you should never make. And it's that a guy will hit right out of the gate. And it's that a team will call up a guy to play them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They should. Both those things should happen. And the problem is that we live in the real world where they just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Heston Kerstad, I have no idea why they called him up.
Exactly. He's just sitting.
They play him against righties. They've played a lot of lefties lately. Like he seems like, why did you call him up to be a platoon guy against righties when you have a ton of lefties already on the team?
Right. Right.
So it's not even like there's a good opening for him because guess what? Like the whole outfield is basically like left-handed or switch, right? Santander, Mullins, Couser, those are all switch and left.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like they didn't need Kerstad to come in to do that. Right. I don't. And they already had like a DH guy for that with Ryan O'Hearn, who's left-handed. Gunnar Henderson is left-handed. Adley Rutschman is a switch hitter. Like this team didn't need him. They called him up anyway. And you couldn't assume that he was just going to play. And that was my concern before he got called up. Right. It's my concern for Junior Caminero when he gets called up.
Right.
That the Rays just don't have anywhere to put him. Right. And I get it. Right. Like there's this mentality that if you're going to call up a top five overall prospect or one of the top two guys in your organization, that you're doing it so they can play. But teams keep showing us that they won't do that. Now, in some cases they do. Volpe got to just play. And yeah, it took him over a year to figure it out. And he still has ups and downs.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And he will still have ups and downs. Right. Wyatt Langford. It's amazing he's in the major leagues at all. A credit to this guy for even making it up here. And you know what? Good on the Rangers for keeping him in the lineup, mm-hmm, right? Like he's not in a platoon yet. He's getting to play and it's rough. Like Jackson Churio is having a rough go of it, right? Because hitting in the major leagues is really hard, mm-hmm, folks. Like it's not easy. Like Evan Carter has done pretty well since being called up, but like he and he's getting to play against lefties, even though they sort of bury him in the lineup when that happens. But that's largely because Texas doesn't really have a choice. Like yeah, their lineup is not that deep. They don't have a lot of guys who can come off the bench and sort of do good things for them. But
and I talked about not having too many rookies in my fantasy lineup, and the Rangers have two rookies, you know, Wyatt Langford,
yeah,
and Carter. And you look at Langford's interesting because, you know, his season stats, nothing to write home about, just a homer in 31 games, batting .224 with a .588 OPS, but not being overwhelmed in terms when you look at his ratios, right? Just a 22.5% K rate, 8.5% walk rate. So that's an interesting one. He actually, and like I said, we're recording this on a Sunday. Now we're waiting on news to see how he left the game with a hamstring issue. We'll see how significant that is.
Yeah, and like let's remember that, like, look, I get it. Like Jackson Churio is disappointing you, but like he has not been a black hole. He's been a black hole in like batting average because he's hitting .220, but he has four home runs and six stolen bases.
Yeah.
right? Like the strikeout rate needs to come down.
Yep.
Like that is absolutely true. Right. He's going to start pulling the ball more. He just needs to adjust to major league hitters. Right. But like, you know, some of the things I look for are things like, you know, is he making contact in the zone? Right. When the batter swings at a pitch in the zone, he's making contact. Churio is. It's 83.7%. 80% zone contact rate is sort of the number I look for. When it's below that, you're probably looking at a very streaky hitter, a la Jack Suwinski, something like that. but if it's above 80, should be fine. Right. And then when you start looking at 90, that's when you're looking at like the sort of slappy hitters, make contact with everything. But you know, Churio's not totally overmatched. A 31.3 strikeout rate is tough and is certainly worse than what he did in the minors. But as a 20-year-old, right? Like 31.3% is not bad for your first go of things, right? For your first month of action.
Right.
And it is coming. I mean, it's gotten a lot better over recent days.
Yeah. Two strikeouts in his last 17 plate appearances and batting a little over 300. I know it's a small sample size, but yeah. A little better.
Yeah, I mean that strikeout rate's down to 20% over his last, I mean small sample, but over his last eight appearances, which is 24 plate appearances. Like, yeah, sure, they took him out of the leadoff spot. It'll probably be a little while before they put him back, but you know, the Brewers, they're one of the aggressive teams on the base paths. He's still doing something for you. Right. And actually, if you want to talk about a team with a bunch of rookies in the lineup, you're looking at it with the Brewers, right? They've got Tyler Blacken right now. They've got Oliver Dunn. They've got Blake Perkins, who's not really like a rookie, but he's a fairly young guy. Bryce Terang is a young guy. Jackson Churio is a young guy. This is a young team.
And they've remained competitive too.
And they're doing enough and they're look. So with rookies, what you're really looking for when you're evaluating rookies early on, like you can't just the fact that a rookie is struggling is not the news, right? Like that's just a thing that happens. Are they overmatched? Like Jackson Holliday was overmatched, right? Like that when something is that far from the minor league numbers, that means there's something about the major league game that this player is not adapting to quickly. Cause you have to remember the guys in AAA are not like the number of major league caliber guys that you see in the minor leagues. There's like a couple of them in AAA for each team, but in the majors, it's the whole roster. Right. Like it's the actual guy. It's the guys that would have been the best in AAA, right? Like all of them, all the time. So there are holes that get exposed at the major league level that you can't expose in the minor league level. So, I mean, this is what we see with a guy who I really like, which is Edouard Julien, right? So with Julien, the strikeout rate was always good because he could spit on like everything, right? And now pitchers can challenge him more in the zone. And Julien's not a great contact guy, right? He's very good at patience and decision-making, but even when he makes the right decisions, he misses with the actual swing. So that's why his strikeout rate's been so high. I think it'll come down a little bit with time, but it's always going to be higher than it was in the minor leagues because major league pitchers are harder to hit, right? Even when you're very selective, it's hard to hit.
Right.
So what you're looking for is like being overmatched. Like Anthony Volpe was never overmatched. He had a quality of contact problem, which has gotten better. Because like, again, the difference between a barrel and a pop-up and a ground out, like it's like the whole thing is 1 inch, right? Like 1 inch on the bat change, like from the top of that inch, it's like a pop-up. The bottom of that inch, it's like a grounder straight into the dirt. And in the middle of it's a barrel, but like that's round bat, round ball thing, right? Like that's quality of contact can be fixed. It's micro adjustments. But when you're not making contact at all, you're probably overmatched, right? Especially in the zone. Jackson Holliday just couldn't find it. He'll be back. His overall prospect.
Oh, no doubt.
Like his overall rating as a prospect doesn't really change that much. Just, you know, maybe people realize the floor is a little lower, right? Because this is the first time he struggled. That always happens the first time a guy struggles. So are they overmatched? That's really what you want to know. And almost as important is, are they going to play?
What
does the roster, look like? You know, the Yankees had no one else really to put in at shortstop. Volpe had, you know, they just told Volpe, look, you're the guy, you're going to be the guy, you're going to play every day. Sometimes you'll get buried in the lineup, but you're always going to play. Right. Yep. That matters because that gives them the chance to sort of adapt. And yeah, it hurts your lineup. Like it hurts your fantasy team too, if you're, you know, starting them every single day, but you can deal with that. Right. With the Reds, right. When they called up Ellie De La Cruz, the issue was that like this team had other guys that could step in if they were right, if they were ready to say like, all right, Ellie, you're going back down. Like, mm-hmm. obviously since then that's not really been the case, but it was a possibility. Right. So when you look at the Rays lineup, like that team is sort of crowded already. Right. They don't always have room for Curtis Meade. He sits against righties, and this is a top 25, 30 prospect in his own right.
Yep.
Who's shown, you know, who's mostly struggled, but has been, you know, who's gotten hot here and there, right? This team still has Brandon Lau, Jonathan Aranda, and Josh Lowe all on the IL, all due back within a couple of weeks.
Right.
Even sooner, right? Like, where does Caminero play? Caminero's, I think, the next big name.
Junior that Caminero. That's what we're waiting for.
yeah, but like, but then what?
I know.
Where does he play?
Yeah.
Right? Like, this team keeps throwing Harold Ramirez out there. And I think, you know, before he got hurt, Aranda was intended to be the everyday DH. So when mm-hmm. he's up, he's a lefty. He'll probably, you know, he'll get to DH. Caminero, a righty, like, where does he go? Because, you know, Isak Paredes isn't coming off the field. Mm-hmm. Right. And Caminero doesn't really play the outfield. Yandy Diaz is struggling, but he's still their leadoff guy. He's still going to play first base. Where's the spot? Like, where does Caminero play? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, Ahmed Rosario is playing fairly well at second base, sometimes DHing.
Outfield.
Jose Caballero. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jose Caballero has played really well. I think they like his defense. Jose Siri is finally back from injury, but he's like a center fielder. They play him for his defense. Like, you're not taking him out.
They play for
where does Caminero play? And don't get caught in the trap. Yeah. Everybody gets caught in this trap of like, well, he's really good. He'll play. And yeah. like, they'll work it out. And like, that's possible. But like the Rays very specifically don't care. Like, they don't operate like a normal team.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, if we want to talk about rookies that are up right now, right. That had a lot of excitement. Like Joey, I know I'm going to say this wrong. In my head, it's Loper Fido.
Loper Fido.
Yeah. So Joey Loper Fido, he's gotten to play against three straight righties, right? The question is, how often is he going to get to play against lefties?
Yeah. Being left-handed, right? Against lefties. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with him, you know, obviously the bellwether for him is going to be the strikeouts. They were high in the minors. They're high right now. He's making contact, but he's also striking out a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like that batting average is probably going to suffer. And that's, you know, if he's striking out a lot against righties, it's going to be really hard for the Astros to say, let's put you in against some lefties.
Right.
Right. Like, yes, they got rid of Jose Abreu and that opened the path for him to sort of play more, but like, they're not, you know, they're willing to let a hot hitting John Singleton play first base.
Absolutely. Right?
And in the outfield, they've got other guys that, you know, there's other outfielders around who can sort of go in to cover against lefties. There's lots of guys in the league who can hit, you know, righties who can hit lefties.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for a lefty to get the rest of the platoon, they got to prove that they're worth plugging in and not platooning. So, you know, he's someone, if the strikeouts are up, he's probably going to continue to be a platoon guy, and that's hard to roster in a 12 teamer, right? Mm-hmm. Even if there's, you know, exciting upside, it might not be quite enough, you know? And so that's what you're looking at for a guy like him. It's, you know, where does the pressure on playing time come from? How does he find a full-time role, and what stats have to be there to get the full-time role? Mm-hmm. For Loper Fido, it's the strikeout rate probably has to be below 30% before we can really start saying this guy's going to take over every day. Yeah. Unless he just gets really hot while striking out a bunch, which is possible, but it's hard to do.
Right? And whereas defense is an issue as well. No, but you're right in terms of all your offensive comments. But I saw an interview with the Astros manager, and they went with concerns about his defense at first. And like you said, it's a crowded outfield as well. And with Singleton playing well, I think in Jeff Zimmerman's column, Minding the News on Saturday, it sounded like Singleton's the first baseman for now.
Yeah. And, you know, he was, you know, a one-time prospect himself, right? It's, you know, and when you look at like the stable of guys that the Orioles want to call back up, right? Like Jackson Holliday, they want to get him back up. Connor Norby, they want to get a look at him. Kobe Mayo, they want to get a look at him too, right? Like, these are guys who are high-end prospects for them in different capacities. And when you look at the Orioles roster, you say, how they can't even get the guys who are up full-time at-bats, right? Like, even when they're hot, right? O'Hearn still sits against every lefty. There's no interest in the Orioles to play O'Hearn against lefties, right? So, you know, Cedric Mullins sits against about half the lefties. Jordan Westberg is playing every day, but that means the other guys can't come up because, you know, like Norby and Mayo, those are infielders. There's nowhere to put them, right? Like the only real opening they have right now is at third base, and it's one opening. Well, technically it could be shortstop, because if it's Jackson Holliday who comes up, Jackson Holliday goes to shortstop, Gunner goes to third, right? So they have one open spot, and like the rest of like, there's no way you probably fill that spot and truly say this is an everyday player. Mm-hmm. They were willing to do that with Jackson Holliday the first time. The second time might go a little different, but like these teams, some of these teams are just really crowded, right? You have to absolutely take that into account when you're looking at guys who are going to get called up. Look, you can be excited about these players getting called up, but always know, like, where is the dagger of Damocles? Like, what is the thing holding over their head that could end their full-time run, right? For a guy like Loper Fido, it's strikeouts.
Right.
Right? Like, that's the thing that could end it, right? Langford doesn't have that problem, right? No one's really going to pressure Langford's time. Mm-hmm. No one's really going to put that much pressure on Jackson Chirio's time, except for Jackson Chirio.
Right.
Where they want to give him maybe a breather against some of the tougher righties, things like that, especially while they're being competitive. But again, it's just, those are the things you have to look at if you're making a decision. Like, don't just say like, oh, hey, he's good, so they're just going to play him. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know the confidence I have in the Rockies doing the right thing with Jordan Beck? It's zero. I have zero confidence the Rockies are going to do the right thing with Jordan Beck, who is off to a rough start. He's, you know, striking out a lot in his first 18 plate appearances. I believe it's what, 10 of them, 10 strikeouts so far, 11 strikeouts in 18 plate appearances. He's got three singles. Look, Jordan Beck is a promising, you know, he has some promise offensively overall, but like just being in cores doesn't just make things happen. Right. Like, cause they're only there for half the games, and two, it's still hard, right? Major League Baseball is still hard. I get it. Jordan Beck was looking really good last season this season in AAA, but it was his first time in AAA, and in AA in 50 games, he struck out 31.8% of the time. Mm-hmm. It looked better in his first, you know, 25 games in AAA. It was great. It was 19.4%. Plate discipline looked good, but look, the major league pitchers early on have found weaknesses, right? Which had been found before.
Right.
So, you know, like I didn't really have much faith in Jordan Beck making the hitter list right off the bat, and he still won't. And that's not because I think he's a bad player. It's because, one, I think they've played him every day so far, which is cool. But like, what happened to Hunter Goodman? Mm-hmm. Hunter Goodman was supposed to be a guy for the Rockies that was going to do some stuff, and they just stopped playing him for Jordan Beck, who's also not like the Rockies do weird things, but like,
and they have for years. Yeah. when you talk about, you know, baseball being hard on young players, you know, I mean, I even go back to an interview I saw with Bruce Bochy, manager for the Rangers a couple weeks ago, where Langford had to be sat because, look, to play a 162 game a season where you're playing 6 days a week, it's grueling. And that's not what, you know, minor league players are used to. So that has to be taken into consideration as well. And like you say, pitchers adjust. Like, look at Colton Cowser, right? He's got off to a tremendous start, but now he's slowing down.
But he actually originally got off to a horrendous start last season.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Then it was good. Now it's bad again. That's going to keep happening.
Yeah. And he has had an issue throughout his minor league career of not being able to hit lefty pitchers. And that's a little bit of an issue so far this season as well. Small sample size, 28 plate appearances, batting 192. But that's something to keep in mind as well. Andy Páez for the Dodgers. Now, he's really gotten off to a good start. And if you look at Eno Saris's recipe for success, you know, for power hitters, you know, pull the ball in the air and hit it hard. So far, he's doing it. I know you think his, and I agree with you, his line drive rate is pretty high right now. I think it's like in the mid-20s. It's going to normalize. But so far, I'm liking what I'm seeing from Andy Páez for the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's It's 28% right now, a 28.8%. Mm-hmm. So again, that'll come down, but that doesn't change the home run numbers. That changes right. the batting average. It's the right. batting average I don't believe in. Mm-hmm. He's still at zero walks through 70 plate appearances, you know, yes. coming into Sunday's games.
Yeah.
Look, so you can't expect him to continue to hit 330 or 300 or probably right. 280 or even maybe 260. Right. Mm-hmm. Like this is probably more of like a long-term 250 kind of hitter. He's getting a bit lucky, but even if you strip the luck away, he's still hitting the ball well. Mm-hmm. He should still hit, you know, he will continue to hit the ball well. But you know, what I like about him isn't just that he pulls the ball and all that good stuff. Like that's why he's a power hitter. But with him, Andy Páez, it's like the situation and the mm-hmm. playing time. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the Dodgers are weirdly thin in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Outman was, you know, a disaster and now he's sitting. So a spot opened up.
Yeah. And if you look at the bench, it's all righties,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the guys that can play the outfield on the bench are Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez. They're both righties, mm-hmm. right? So like that doesn't create a platoon with Páez. So he gets to keep playing. He gets to keep hitting behind, you know, what is baseball's most dangerous offense, at least 1 through 6,
mm-hmm.
right? Even when you say like, oh, well, you know, Muncy and Teoscar aren't always that good. Well, they are right now.
Muncy right? hit 3 home runs on Saturday. Yeah. yeah. Pretty well.
Like they're all, you know, these are dangerous hitters. And then, you know, so there's a great RBI opportunity there. There's a good playing time opportunity there. Yeah, sure, it stinks that he's hitting seventh, but hitting seventh for the Dodgers is like hitting fifth everywhere else,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of like opportunities. So, you know, that lineup turns over plenty. That's a rookie who came into a great situation. I was a little bit like, you know, I was a little conservative because I'm always conservative with rookies who come up, right? Mm-hmm. Especially one on a team who did have other guys they could plug in. And so basically what I had to look at with him is, look, if he doesn't hit the ball well right out of the gate, he's probably a part-time player. It's the yeah. same thing that James Outman even had a decent season last year. But once he started not hitting, they were like, all right, well, you're not going to play against lefties anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just what they did because they had other options and they're the Dodgers and they, you know, they're trying to win all the games that they can.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like they're 22-13. But they're not going to start sitting on their laurels quite yet, you know? So that's a rookie with a great situation. And like the Rangers, they're, you know, they're still winning ball games. They've got no reason to sit Wyatt Langford,
mm-hmm.
right? So he'll keep playing. And the Brewers are still competitive. So mm-hmm. like they'll sit Churio, but they know their best chance at making the playoffs is Churio figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to probably keep playing most of the time, right? It's other teams. So like the Orioles and the Rays are the two teams that stand out the most as teams that will like kind of just mess with their roster all the time. Mm-hmm. They'll bring up a young guy, but they might not play him all the time because they're just full, right? They have a lot of pressure on certain spots, right? Even though the Rays like aren't playing that well right now, like they're at the bottom of their division, but they're 16-18, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not at all out of it.
Of course not.
They're just in a tough division, right? They're just in a tough division. They'd be, you know, better off in other ones. So that's, you know, it's a lot, you know, I know I'm spitting a lot of wind about these rookies, but it's all about, you know, start the way you do in fantasy football. What's the opportunity, right? Like the number one fantasy back in any given year for the rookie class isn't necessarily the one with the most talent. It's the one with the best opportunity.
So you're
looking at these rookies, look at the opportunity, and then look at the thing that will try to figure out what the thing is that will decide whether this guy's going to get to be locked into the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Again, for Kowser, it was contact, right? And once it faded, what happened? Boom. He's a part-time player,
mm-hmm.
right? Same with Outman, right? It was, oh, once you start struggling, boom, we have other guys that will come in. But with Langford, he can struggle and the team just they don't really have any other options anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like even Jordan Westberg, if Jordan Westberg has been fantastic this season, I do think the strikeout rate is probably going to come up a little, or he's got to stop whiffing so much. Cause like how close his whiff rate and strikeout rate are, is not really sustainable unless he's become one of like the five best players in the league at shortening up, with two strikes, mm-hmm. Which is possible. I just don't think it's likely yet. But so here's the thing, that team is deep enough that if Jordan Westberg has a bad month, he's not a full-time player anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that doesn't mean you should do anything. You just need to know what the floor is to make the right decisions in the future. So understand what the floor, understand, look, the ceiling is the part that's fun and exciting that we all talk about. Remember what the floor is. For right now, for Wyatt Langford, the floor does not look like a guy who's going to get sat very often. It's a guy who's going to struggle. Spencer Torkelson is still a ways from getting benched, right? Like that's probably, you know, we might start seeing him get sat against really tough righties, but for the most part, he's going to keep playing. He's just going to move down in the lineup. So the floor for Torkelson is getting pushed down to 7th, 8th, 9th while he struggles. And when he's successful, he can move back up. Mm-hmm. Other guys, when they struggle, they just get benched.
But it's important, like, there's important not a- what you're saying in terms of trying to identify when it's time to move on. Like you said, when Torkelson gets sat against right-handed pitching, you know, then maybe it's time to, you know, move on from him. And with these rookies, it's important to really keep an eye on and identify when you think that there's a situation where they're going to be out of the lineup and you know, or a part-time player. So it really takes a lot of managing. It's a roster, you know.
Yeah, and just take a look at the rosters. Like, okay, if they wanted to bench Torkelson for a lefty, who?
Right.
McKinstry or Meadows? That's not better.
Right.
Like that doesn't give them a better shot. So, like, he's probably going to keep playing for a while because the Tigers don't have other options. But again, to go back to Baltimore, they do. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Vaughn Grissom isn't great out of the gate for the Red Sox, right? Like, they still probably want him to play. Right? Because, like, they don't have tons of options in the infield that are that appealing to them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they've got a lefty in David Hamilton who's not really hit at all. He's got some speed, but that's it. So, like, they might as well stick with Grissom against tough righties, right? Like, they did put in Hamilton against one of them, but Vaughn Grissom will probably still keep playing, right? Sedain Rafaela has had one amazing game and really struggled for the rest of the season, but there's no one else to play shortstop, like, on the whole roster.
Right.
So he's going to keep playing, right? That's the floor. It's bad performance, but still mostly an everyday role. But on other more crowded teams, it'll be worse, right? If Rafaela was a Dodger, he'd be down.
Oh, no doubt.
Right? If Rafaela was, you know, an Oriole, he'd be down. Yeah, he'd be down. Because they're like, nah, we'll move on. But so you try to keep that team context in mind. It's why so many Athletics have been interesting. Because the Athletics are dying for anybody to be a full-time player.
Right.
And like, they still won't do it with Estuary Ruiz. But, you know, even when he did hit some home runs.
There's got to be a backstory to that. But I guess we'll find out down the road as to why, you know.
Yeah, maybe he's not that good of a hitter.
You think that's it? All right. Maybe. So, good stuff as always, Scott. Glad to be back with you for this episode, and I guess that all slams the lid on things for today. We got probably like 20 minutes before the Yanks and Tigers get off the first pitch, so going to be enjoying that. Going to be enjoying watching Tariq Skubal. Follow my man Scott at If the Chew Fits. Follow me at Joe Galena. And as always, as we like to say, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.